TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. Enjoy more of the things you love with TCL. These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
Well, these two guys actually aren't Mackie and Judd. Instead, it's Zolgad and Star Tribune sports columnist, my good friend Chip Scoggins. And I guess it's fair to say that we do have Minnesota sports flowing through our veins. And in that vein, Chip Scoggins, no pun intended, you made the trek last weekend. You went to see Cubs-Twins. You saw Notre Dame football play. And then you went to Indianapolis to see the Vikings game. I watched it on TV, but how bad was that in person? And I mean, what's your takeaway now? Because, you know, this to me, just quick sample size, eight quarters, feels like 2011. Just not a very good team, full of flaws, full of play, you know. So what was your takeaway from that game?
Yeah, and that's, you know, I think Zimmer hit the nail on the head after the game where he said, we're not really good at anything. And it was brutally honest, but it was accurate. And that's the sense I've gotten from these first two games, where we haven't seen this from a Zimmer team. Now, we've seen them have clunkers, right? We've seen them have a bad game.
Yes.
But you haven't seen a stretch like this where you just felt like they're completely overwhelmed and overmatched. And it just feels like there's so many things wrong with this team now, some out of their control with injuries and opt-outs and that kind of thing. Personnel-wise, and just the way they're playing. I mean, it is – I said this to the guys from the Strip guys. We were there, like, afterwards. We were having dinner. I said, name me one thing about this team that after two games you feel positive about. I mean, can you pick one?
I'm honestly processing. No, I can't. I can't because I'm – well, I'll say this. I feel good about people who don't look good right now are probably getting valuable experience. But no, there's nothing that I can take away and say it's a positive as far as the games themselves.
Yeah, you look at me like, there hasn't been one thing where you say, okay, you know, that area right there, you see something, right? You see,
yes.
But I can't even say that. I mean, defensively, they're a mess. And offensively, I mean, I guess Thielen, you could say that's a positive. He's played well. I mean, he had the one drop, but he's, you know, he's kind of one guy that's shown up. But you know, I'm writing this for Sunday, Judd, that, you know, Zim's, you know, billed himself as the fixer, but I don't know that he's had a project like this since he's been here. Do you?
No, he is not.
There's just so many things that have to be addressed that this is not like, well, I got to shore up, you know, the pass rush or one little area. I mean, it just seems like there's so many issues right now that they have to get fixed.
Going from that statement, Chipper, what is your feeling about the direction of where this team should go, what this team should do? Because I'm with you. I think that there were assumptions made by people that run the team about development of players that I think a lot of us questioned, but they made the assumptions. Through eight quarters of football, they've been proven to be grossly wrong. In your opinion, what should be the next step right now?
Well, I know everybody's on the Tank for Trevor campaign. And I mean, after two games, I just think that's, you know, I mean, it's fun to say, and it's been so bad and all that, but I think a little premature there. And I just think there are worse teams in the NFL that are going to be really bad all year. I have to think that this team's going to play better at some point. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to rip off five straight wins because I just think that the issues they have on personnel is, honestly, Judd, I think I would just keep, you know, this is all about getting these young guys experience this year.
Yes.
You know, I mean, as much as you hate to say that, this is not a championship team. They're not one of the upper echelon teams, but you have to find out, you have to get these guys experience. And that's, to me, that's, you know, that's everything right now. And the other thing is, I don't know, with Cousins, I don't know what his long-term status is. Is this a one-year thing? Are they really going to be able to hold on to for three more years? But you have to get him righted, right? I mean, to the extent that you can, you have to get him playing better. If you see him as your guy for the next 3 years, and I don't know that they do that internally.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they readdress his contract situation after this year, but your quarterback cannot play this bad. You have to figure out a way to help him.
Okay, so the word tank is fun. Like, it's just a fun word. Tank for Trevor. It's fun. It's fun to say. It's fun to say this team stinks and therefore they should tank. I think that we all agree in all sports, but especially football, tanking is impossible. Like, the athletes aren't going to do it. The coaches aren't going to do it. It's a fun thought process.
Yeah.
That is a pie in the sky process. But that being said, I think what you're saying is right on point, and I would, in the realistic world, much prefer to replace the term tank with opportunity. This is an opportunity to say, we made a mistake. Our cornerbacks could not possibly, and this is not a surprise to probably Chip or Judd, our cornerbacks could not possibly be developed as quickly as we thought. So I'm with you. I would play all of those guys as much as possible. But here's the important, in my world, caveat to the conversation now. Because at the start of the year or in training camp, I said this. I said, the one thing you can't do is put these guys in with pressure and ruin them. Because that's a massive mistake, and we have both seen athletes be ruined. But if you call them in and say, look, we're not good, and we know that, but you're a good player. Jeff Gladney, Cam Dantzler, right? You're good players. So, and you are not going to sit. You are going to play, and you're going to struggle, and we're going to work with you at every turn. Mike is not going to yell and scream unless he's doing it for your long-term good. But Mike is going to help you, and we are going to play you as much as we've been playing you. And turn around then and say, Ezra Cleveland, come here. The second you are prepared to play, you're playing now. And if we have to sit the left guard, that's fine. If we have to sit Riley Reiff, I don't care. So, but we get hung up on tank as if you're actually going to go into the locker room in Egan and say, boys, let's lose this week. Not going to happen. But what you can do is put yourself in a position to seize the opportunity of development and lose games. And my last point, Cousins and Thielen and that group are going to come to you and say, what are you doing? And you're going to say, guys, I'm sorry. It's too bad. You don't like it. But this is how we're going to do things.
Well, and the thing is, Judd, is you know, nobody's going to lose on purpose. But if you're playing young guys, there's a good chance it might just happen anyways.
That's my point. But it's not tanking. It's opportunity.
Yeah. And the older guys might not like it, but they've already started this process. You know, what are the options other than playing these young guys? There are no options. I mean, I guess you could go try to find a bunch of street veterans that are not playing right now, but that serves no good. So the one with Ezra Cleveland, well, we can't, you know, Drew Samia cannot play any worse than he did Sunday. I mean, that was, you know, you wonder if Cleveland would not be an upgrade there, but if they don't feel like he's physically ready or knows the offense or anything, I wouldn't put a guy out there who's not physically ready just because you want him to learn on the job. I mean, they have to be able to.
Right. As soon as you're ready.
You have to be competent. Yeah. And so, but yeah, I mean, the thing is like Dantzler and Gladney, they have to play because there's no other cornerbacks. And so, they're going to, I mean, this is what this season is. And I think we probably, I don't know if we all believed it, but when they said they're just going to retool on the fly and you can plug and play, sounded good. but in the reality, when you don't have an off season, you don't really have a training camp or preseason games. And then, by the way, you're facing just a gauntlet of the top quarterbacks in NFL. It's going to be growing pains. I mean, I think we all expected this. You know, that's not what you heard coming out of, almost said Winter Park, but the Vikings facility. But,
yep.
It was right there in front of us, plain sight, right? What was going to happen. But I do think, even knowing that, Judd, it's been worse than I expected. I didn't expect mm-hmm. to play this poorly, particularly the offense. I thought the defense would struggle. The offense, I don't say I'm shocked, but I'm surprised at how poorly they played.
Yeah, no, these two games have been awful. I guess my point now is let's look at these two games, see where this team is at realistically, and go from there. And if they misjudge things, you know, they did. And they clearly did. I will say this because, you know, after they lost to the Colts on Sunday, there's already questions about Zim's job, blah, blah, blah.
No.
He's not being fired. He shouldn't be fired. Now, does that mean that in March you don't potentially reassess? I'm sure you do. But I don't think anyone's going to lose their job in season. I actually don't think that they should. No. But I also don't think that there should be pressure now turned around and put on Mike to win immediately. If this is what the process is going to be, you know what? That's fine.
Yeah.
Like, it stinks to watch, but it's fine.
Well, and you know, and this is why we said, knowing what they were doing with their roster and turning it over, that you couldn't have Zimmer go into this as a lame duck year and make this be the ultimate, you know, winner else year, because, you know, it was so easy to brush aside, oh, you're getting rid of Stephon Diggs, but you got Justin Jefferson. He's great. Look what he did in college. It's like, it's not the same. You got rid of your best wide receiver. And let's be honest, you have one wide receiver who's proven at this point. One. And so to think that that's okay or is going to work, it doesn't work that way. And it was easy to say, Xavier Rhodes is old, and Trey Waynes, he wasn't that good, and wait till you see these young guys. Well, you can't just snap your finger and think it's going to be the same or be better. I mean, it doesn't work that way. And right. So, no, I don't think them, you know, his job's in jeopardy. I mean, this is why you gave him the extension. But I don't think that it's a free pass either, just to put on display what we've seen the last, you know, couple weeks. I mean, they've had a lot of undisciplined penalties, Judd. I mean, just, you know, stuff that's just killing him. And, mm-hmm. And he's had some, you know, he had another, I thought, game management mistake last week. Now, it didn't matter because they were in the grand scheme because they were getting steamrolled. But it's not just a, you know, free pass to put crummy, you know, performances on tape. But to think that they were going to be, I thought they'd be a 500 team. And I think my prediction was 9-7. Clearly, I don't, you know, that was overshooting it, but I didn't think this was, you know, that team was going to get to the NFC Championship game either. So, but they need a performance that, even if they lose Sunday, just to show some signs of, okay, they're playing better, they just got beat by a better team, something positive. But there's just been nothing positive or optimistic about these first two games where you can, you know, point to. I mean, just across the board, the whole thing has just been a disaster, you know. So and the thing is, it's an 0-5 start doesn't seem unrealistic right now when you look at the next 3 weeks, you know, with the opponent.
Right.
So this could snowball bad if they don't turn it around Sunday.
What's your assessment of Cousins?
And he's been bad. I mean, you know, that performance Sunday, when you go into the fourth quarter with a 0.0 passer rating, there's no other way to spin it. You can say his offensive line's crummy and he only has Thielen, but some of his passes, he just looks lost right now to me. Doesn't you? It just doesn't look like there's any kind of sense of how to right the ship, so to speak. And so he's got to play better. I mean, he has not been good. And then, you know, on top of that, all the issues we talked about, he just got to play better. I mean, he's just not been good.
He is. So it's weird because, yes, he's been bad. The thing about this team is the defensive problems actually don't shock me completely. The corners were new when mm-hmm. Pierce opted out. I think the run defense is going to be atrocious. Like, you have put in two backup guys who, in my opinion, in Stephon and Jahlil Johnson mm-hmm. are backups. They've got no, you're not developing them. They're not going to turn into good players. They are who they are. And mm-hmm. I mean, Zim's defense has always started with, you know, a three technique who's incredibly strong. He doesn't have that now, or a nose tackle. Mm-hmm. So the defensive struggles, while jarring and certainly surprising for a Zim coach team, are not fun to see. It's the offensive inefficiencies and struggles that surprise me. The play calling has not been good. The 4th-and-3 shot in week one to Tajae Sharpe was ridiculous. And to go to your point now, the quarterback play, the quarterback, when it's mattered, has looked completely lost and flustered. Now, I'm not completely surprised by that fact. But that's the side of the ball that if you had come to me in August and said, they're going to be 0-2, they're going to look terrible, the defense is really going to struggle and scuffle and not be good, But here's the flip side. Dalvin Cook is going to not get the ball that much, and the offense is going to be absolutely atrocious. I would have said, come on now, that's too much. But the offense has looked atrocious.
Well, and it's, you know, Dalvin's been, and I don't put any stock into the garbage time stuff in week one.
Agreed.
But it's just the inability to for them to sustain anything. And that, you know, their offense is totally predicated on ball control, time of possession, you know, control the clock. They're dead last in the NFL, I think, in time of possession, because they can't sustain anything. And it's, you know, if Dalvin gets stopped on a first down run, let's say it's second nine, it just feels like they're punting, you know, that just doesn't seem like they're going to be able to overcome that. And, you know, the thing you worry about is teams are going to know, hey, let's just bracket Thielen and not worry about anybody else. So they've got to get Jefferson up to speed. And this is game planning and quarterback.
Yes.
Quarterback has to have some trust in those guys, and Kubiak's going to have to figure out, you know, Irv Smith's going to have to make some plays, but there has to be more options than just hope Thielen makes a diving catch. All that, I mean, because it's just eventually teams are just going to really emphasize and try to take him out, and there has to be, you know, complementary pieces to that, or, you know, then you really have nothing, because if they stop Dalvin and you only have one guy in your passing game, I think we've seen that the first 2 weeks. There's just no other place to go with the ball. So it has to be trust from Cousins, but also the game plan to try to get those guys involved and manufacture touches for him, if anything.
Where are Cook and the tight ends in the passing game? That's the one that I completely don't get.
Yeah, I know. And that's, you know, some of those screens or, you know, as you go back to that fourth and three, I was surprised they didn't try to throw something to Rudolph there.
Yeah.
In that week one.
Sure.
You know, big target. We know he, Cousins has confidence in him in the red zone, but like that seemed like the ideal spot to try to find Rudolph. So, yeah, I mean, I would think that they're going to have to get him involved, you know, because it just can't be Thielen. And so,
but where is I don't get what's going on here. And I guess what we don't get to know is how much of this is Kubiak's play calling, how much of this is Kirk trying to rely on Thielen. Because right now, Chip, right now, it looks like Kirk and Thielen are going out at third grade recess, and they're best friends, right? And it's like, throw me the ball, Kirk, throw me the ball. And he's like, you bet I will, my best friend, you know, and because then I'm going to come over to your house and we're going to play games tonight. And it's like, no, that's not how this league operates. But
yeah,
but the reliance on number 19 in Adam Thielen continually, to me, is just completely baffling, because to what you're saying, I think opposing defenses already are very much saying, oh, this is what you're going to do? Awesome. Mm-hmm. Keep doing it.
And this is not to excuse this, but how much do you think the lack of offseason hindered like the chemistry and the trust factor that Cousins had or could develop with his other receivers? You know, that's not to give him a pass on it, but you do wonder, like with Jefferson or,
sure,
or Smith, if he just hasn't had the time with those.
But then
guys,
where's the short passing game? I mean, Dalvin Cook is sitting right there. Check down to Dalvin Cook.
Yeah. Well,
Bradford
and
did.
Cook has been, yeah, and Cook has been just, they've got to put the ball in his. How many touches did he have the other?
I know. It's ridiculous.
Something like that. I mean,
just throw him, just dump the ball off to him. Just tell Kirk, dump the ball off. We're not even asking you. There's no risk here. Like,
yeah.
Like I could make that pass, and that's what I don't get. So look, the most jarring thing to me, I think, of all the weird and offensive play calls and weird Kirk plays that I don't get through eight quarters of football, the most jarring one to me was the deep shot for Sharp on fourth and three, mm-hmm, in week one, because that's the exact type of thing that goes to what you're saying, which is how much did Sharp and Cousins even work on things together?
Well,
you know?
I know. And it's, well, one, the play call for Zimmer to sign off on what Kubiak said there.
Yes.
Well, it tells you how much, you know, trust or whatever he has in Kubiak just to make the call. But, you know, I thought that was weird. But then the fact that you're going to Sharp there and not forcing it. And I know he said there's safety over top on Thielen's side, but still, I'm going to my best guy there. So the whole thing has just been, I can't remember. And maybe you're right. Go back to 2011, back-to-back games where you just felt like man, this is a bad team. You mm-hmm. know, that's what it just, I walked out of there Sunday night out of the stadium Sunday night. I was like, man, they are not good at all, you know,
correct.
In anything like what Zimmer said. And so I'm curious to see what happens this weekend. If it continues, if there's some uptick, I have to think that the run defense is going to be in for a long day because, as Zimmer said, they are undersized along the line now, and they just don't have the personnel they thought they were going to have. And, mm-hmm. oh, by the way, you're facing the power back of, you know, the best power back in the league right now in
yeah.
Henry. So
absolutely. But the offense can't be this bad.
No.
There's no excuse for that.
No. I mean, they just seem like, I think lost is the word I keep coming back to. They just seem lost on offense. They don't, as Zimmer said, like they don't even know what their identity is right now.
I think I think part of the problem is mentally. If the quarterback gets rattled, it's really bad. Now the one cautionary tale about Kirk though is the worse this team gets, the better Kirk is going to get because he is the classic. Hold on a second. There's no pressure now, guy. Oh, hell yeah. Cool. So the more that Kirk is asked to chase games, or in my opinion, more importantly to this conversation, the season, the more statistically solid he's going to get, because Kirk is at his worst, aside from the throw to Thielen against the Saints, Kirk is ordinarily at his worst when he feels that there is pressure being put on Kirk.
And hey, we were talking about this the other night at dinner, Judd. When was the game afterwards where Zimmer told him, stop thinking so much, just cut it loose? And then he ripped off like four or five, you know, stretch games where he played really well. Was that last year or the year before? Remember he had...
It might have been after the Chicago game last year, because didn't they go play the Giants then at MetLife Stadium? And that Giants team stunk, but he played really well.
Yeah, I think that's where it was where, he looks like he's in that rut again where he's thinking about everything and overthinking. And he almost gets paralyzed by, thinking about... you know, trying to be perfect or whatever. And maybe Zim needs to have another one of those. Hey, just cut it loose.
This sounds nuts. Chip,
what's that?
This is going to sound nuts, but if you process it through, I think it makes sense. I would have benched him at halftime against the Colts because he's so out of his mind right now, as far as his approach goes. I wouldn't have benched him and said, you stink, you're being punished. I would have said, Kirk, just, I'm going to bench you. I want you to just watch the game.
That's a hard card to play, though.
I know it is.
It really is, because, I mean, the backup's
not very good. Oh, right, but you're dead.
You know, but he is still your starting quarterback, and once you can only play that card once, you know, and if it doesn't work, now you got a problem, you know.
Yeah, but I don't have a competition. Candy. Like, it's not like I'm replacing him with a guy that's really going to replace him.
No, but I'm just saying if you put him back in the next game and now he's thinking that, oh, my God, I might get benched. I understand what you're saying. I think he just might need, like, this week, just saying, just cut it loose. Let's do things that get him in a rhythm where it's the – because we've seen it. Like, when he gets in a rhythm, the bootlegs, the rollouts, kitten stuff.
Yep.
I would be willing to bet the farm we're going to see that Sunday to try to get him going, get him in a rhythm, and get some confidence where just quick hitting stuff. You say, get to Dalvin, let him go make some plays. Just establish something, some kind of rhythm, and get back to what he does well. So I would be surprised if we see that Sunday.
The concerning thing right now to me is how well the scripted plays have worked.
Yeah.
And then once you get past the script, he just completely falls apart. And that's two consecutive games.
The second quarter's been rough. I mean, it's just like they don't do anything. They start off well. It looks good. I mean, a couple throws he made to Thielen on that first drive, excuse me, last week.
Absolutely.
You're thinking, okay, yeah, that first week was over with. Now they're going to play well, and then it just comes to a grinding halt. So, and but the thing is with him, and we've seen it, when things go bad, they just snowball, and it's like he can't get out of it.
Yes.
You know, it's like the rest of the game is just, nothing. And so that's where you're right. When you get off the scripted plays, they need to figure out how to put him in the best position to where he gets in a rhythm and feels good about what he's doing. But if he takes a sack or they have a couple of series where it doesn't go anywhere, it's like they can't get out of that and generate anything. They haven't been able to sustain anything.
Exactly right. Okay. So that's the bad in sports. Now, the good, at least in this town, is going to be starting on Tuesday. The Twins are going to start the first round of the playoffs. They're in. Houston, Cleveland, or the Yankees right now look like the options. It's almost certain. I think it's going to be at Target Field, Chipper. Best of three, first round. If you were to rank the opponent, who would you? Who do you most want 1-3 in the first round of the playoffs?
I would say Houston 1.
Mm-hmm.
This might sound crazy, Jeb, but since it's a 3-game series, mm-hmm. I might put Yankees 2 and Cleveland 3.
Based on pitching?
Yeah, because if you're going to face Bieber and what, I assume Plesac, right? For Cleveland, they're going to be their 1-2.
Savale's in there, yeah, but yes.
Now, Cleveland's lineup doesn't scare you. They're one of the lowest scoring teams in baseball.
Yes, that's what I like.
So I would probably put them 3. So I would go, or I'd probably put them 2. The one I think Houston would be number 1 on my list.
I agree.
I still think the Yankees because of, you could say these guys aren't going to be intimidated by whatever, but it's still the Yankees. They still score a lot of runs. I think they have one of the top 5 offenses in baseball. And so I think I would rank him Houston, Cleveland, then Yankees.
Here's the thing that I like about the potential of playing Cleveland, which is, to your point, a very good pitching team, but they can't hit. So far this year in the series against Cleveland, Maeda, who would almost certainly, or not almost certainly, who would start game 1 against Bieber, he is 3-0 in 3 starts against Cleveland. He has walked only 4. He struck out 20, and his ERA is 0.50. So I actually think, especially at home, the Maeda-Bieber matchup would be a lot of fun, and it wouldn't be, and I'm not insinuating in any way that it would be easy for the Twins, but I do think, given Kenta's success against Cleveland in 2020, that it would be a very winnable game here.
Yeah, so would you put them ahead of Houston?
No, I would say Houston, I don't think, the Strohs are that good. So I would put Houston 1, Cleveland 2, Yankees 3, and to be clear here too, as well, I am not afraid to face the Yankees, but, and we've talked about this on the show with Phil as well, if you face them the longer the series, the weaker their pitching gets. And so instead of going best of 3, Gerrit Cole, oh my gosh, Tanaka, who's not as good, but he's solid. You now go, if it's a best of 5 or best of 7, better yet, you now go Gerrit Cole game 1, Tanaka game 2, and you don't even know who they're going to start in game 3.
Sure.
And I actually think if you put the Twins up against the Yankees in a longer series, I'm going to take the Twins' potential starting rotation right now almost every time in its totality over what the Yankees are going to do.
Yeah, and but you also have to, you're going to face that lineup longer too, and that's what scares you. But the thing is, Judd, doesn't it seem wide open to you?
Oh yeah, it's going to be fantastic. It'll be fun.
I mean, the seeds, you're going to have the seeds, but who do you think would be the favorite going in right now? I mean, I don't know that there is a prohibitive favorite. Do you? I mean, there's not that one team where you're like, all right, everybody's playing for second, this year.
Are the Dodgers in the National League? I mean, they're.
No, I'm talking about American League.
Okay.
American
League. Yeah, no, probably not.
It'll be interesting.
I mean, it's 8
to see
teams.
Have odds makers who they pick as the favorite going in. I think there's something to be said about being hot right now, and the Twins and Cleveland are hot.
Mm-hmm.
And so does that carry over? I don't know, but I mean, they're clearly loose with the robes and the way they're playing and everything. I think they're in a good spot. I really do, and I like the way Maeda is pitching. I think their pitching depth, if they can get through this first round, I think it's going to be huge for them. Because while they may not have the Gerrit Cole or the Bieber, they have depth. Guys that you can, especially if Odorizzi comes back, I don't know how much you can rely on him. But if he can come back and be himself, I mean, you feel pretty good about that rotation. And I know their bullpen is, they got to get Taylor Rogers squared away, but I do like what they have there. So, I really feel like this is the year where you don't go in and like, oh, we really don't want to play that team, because I don't think there's any team that just strikes the fear in everyone else.
Yeah, if you think about this from the Twins standpoint, what's the one thing that you're slightly concerned about right now? Probably getting Cruz to the point where his knee, hamstring, I don't know exactly what's wrong, the team has said knee, where that is fine. Getting a rise back would certainly help, making sure that Donaldson is as healthy as possible. But beyond those things, yeah, I think that this is going to be, look, this year has been weird. The rules have been altered. There's a lot about baseball that if you're a purist in 2020, I'm sure you absolutely hate, Chip. Yeah. But to me, embrace the weirdness, embrace the wacky. And yeah, when you're going to start with an 18 playoff field in each league, it's going to be weird, but it's also going to be potentially fun. And I do think that you're right. American League wise, at least, if not both leagues, it's going to have a wide open feel that the baseball playoffs probably normally don't have to this extent.
And you look at the Twins, Judd. So they have the best home record in American League or all of baseball?
I think all of baseball. It's ridiculous.
All of baseball.
Yes.
So do we think that's going to be a factor?
Okay, here's my dilemma there. I believe that the Twins were so much better during the regular season this year at home than on the road because they actually got to go home. And I think that there's something to be said for being on the road and, you know, after the whole Cardinals debacle and Marlins thing, being told don't leave your room, get room service. Starting on Tuesday of this week, so now the Twins are in the midst of being quarantined in a hotel here. It's going to change, and it's going to be like they're on the road. But that being said, I think that they have established a confidence of playing at Target Field that they probably don't have elsewhere. So I firmly believe that my feeling on their playoff chances in the first round would change dramatically if they somehow had to go elsewhere and play.
Yeah, and it's funny. It's not like we look at, like with the Vikings, where they clearly lost their home field advantage with the noise, but I think there is something to be said about comfort and just routine and be in a place that you're familiar with and probably not having to, you know, well, now they are sleeping in a hotel, but you're right. Sleeping at home and just not having to get on a flight. I mean, I'm sure there's some, you know, some degree of benefit to that, but the fact that after this one series, everybody's in San Diego or the Texas.
Arlington and Houston, I think.
Yeah, it's going to negate all that. But this short series, though, I mean, it's going to be interesting. That's why, you know, it's, you know, if you have to go up against Bieber or Gerrit Cole right out the chute, I mean, now, you know, you may see upsets. Because you only have to win two games. And so teams that you thought might get through if your ace has a clunker, you know, now all of a sudden you're scrambling. It's going to be fascinating to see how this plays out and if this is going to be the format going forward after this year. I hope it's not.
I got a feeling it might be.
I do think they like the idea of, you know, more postseason games and more teams in the pennant race and all that. And, you know, the excitement that it creates and more fan bases. I think I prefer to go back to the old format versus this one, but it'll be interesting to see what the reaction for players is with the short first series.
Do you like the robes?
Do I like the what?
The robes.
I do.
The JD robes that Cruz then said, and I love Cruz. He's basically like, I'm not playing. What can I do? I'm going to give out my robe to everyone who hits a home run.
You know what? Baseball needs some fun in it, right?
Yes.
And if that, I like it. I mean, if it, you know, clearly it's something that they've kind of taken to and it's created a fun vibe in the dugout. And so I like it. I mean, I'm sure it'll be, you know, because we've seen other things. We've seen the rally monkey and we've seen different things from teams over the years. And so if they were to get on a roll, I'm sure we would see people. Well, we probably wouldn't because we can't leave our houses and work downtown. But I say you see people wearing robes everywhere and buying those up. I'm sure the team or somebody's figuring out how to make money off those. And
oh, you got to have those, you know, in the pro shop, right? By next year, by next spring, those got to be in the pro shop.
I would think they probably will be, you know. That would be my guess.
They'll be expensive, too. So are you a robe guy or not?
I am not.
I'm not either.
I never have. Those look comfortable, though. I'll say that.
They do look nice, yes. I think my problem is my robe, which I don't wear, is sort of flimsy and cheaper. I think if I had the nice robe that sort of hugged you, I think I might feel different.
I got to be honest, I never owned a robe.
I just owned one as a kid. It was very comfortable.
Yeah, I never. Now, my dad was.
Dads were always robes.
Dads were guys. Robes. I've never had one, and so maybe I should invest one. I should be a robe, right?
But you got to get a nice robe. Like, don't get a cheap robe, because you won't like the robe then. It's not really comfortable. It's got to be, and that's the thing is, these robes look incredibly comfortable. I could do these robes, but I'm not going. But I wouldn't pay. That's my problem. I'm too cheap to pay for the robe itself.
What do you think? What do you think those suckers go for? I'm sure they weren't cheap.
Donaldson probably. My guess. Well, he got them in bulk. I would guess if you bought one of them, the way that those look, $120.
Yeah, I was guessing a couple hundred bucks.
$150.
Yeah.
You think so?
I will not be spending $150 on a robe. I can tell you that.
Oh no. But I guess so. It turns out I heard this story a couple. Days ago after Donaldson bought the robe. It turns out, I guess David Price bought him in Toronto when Donaldson was there. Same type of deal. And so he got the idea. It did cross my mind briefly, too. I wonder if Donaldson, and I don't know when he actually put in the order for the robe, but I wonder if he did that after he called all umpires fools and his teammates basically were like, thanks a lot, Josh. I'm not going to get a call for at least the remainder of this season, if not into 2021.
Yeah. I'm guessing the robe order was put in before then.
Me too.
The fact that they're, you know, custom made, but I don't think he really cared at that point.
Chipper, it was the greatest Zoom call I will ever be on.
I was at Notre Dame Stadium, and I'm seeing these quotes. I'm like, what is going on that Zoom?
Oh,
I just called
that. That was
everybody.
A Zoom. That was a man with a mission on a Zoom.
You know, God bless the guy that speaks his mind. I mean, we ask athletes to be honest, and he was honest. And
great.
It'll be interesting to see. I wonder if privately if he got fined by the league. I wouldn't be shocked if he did.
He did get fined. He got fined for sure for kicking dirt on the plate and being ejected. One, but I don't know.
Yeah. He got fined again for his comments on the basically saying they don't care and they just want to go home.
He had to.
I wouldn't be surprised. But yeah, I don't. You know, you haven't. Of course, we don't. You know, we're not around the players anymore in Zoom, so we're not. You know, I would guess that he has enough respect in that clubhouse for, you know, his career, that guys probably support him and side with him, because I'm sure there's a lot of guys that feel the same way in that clubhouse.
They just don't say it.
They don't either have the, they don't want to create the waves, or they don't have the stature that Josh Donaldson does as a former MVP to be able to speak that, you know, his mind like that. So, I'm sure it didn't go over well with the umpires seeing those quotes.
No.
But I don't know that, you know. I don't know if he'll end there, or if you'll see any other things here as the playoffs, you know, get going.
He is a wound tight guy. I will give him that.
Though,
in
right?
An ordinarily, you know, from Baldelli to Cruz, in an ordinarily very relaxed live and let live clubhouse environment, one of the things that just stinks about this year, Chip.
Yeah.
And it's not like we got total access, so don't get me wrong here, but you know, we go in pre and post game, right? And you could sort of get a feel for what Cruz meant in that clubhouse last year, just from sort of being around just a little bit, and the weight that he carried. We know nothing about teams now, and I would love to see the dynamic of you know, Cruz in one corner, and my guess is Donaldson in a different corner, and then Sergio, who is his own sort of loose cannon, not like Donaldson, but it would be a lot of fun. And this extends beyond the Twins too. It would be a lot of fun because ordinarily you feel like you know something about a team's personality.
Sure.
This team's personality, it's like, well, they're wearing robes after home runs now. That seems like fun, but you can't really tell much about the personality and who's doing what.
No, you miss so much by having to do it the way we're doing it now, and just the lack of contact and conversation with those guys. You know, the thing I miss is just being able to walk in the clubhouse and like having a conversation with Josh Donaldson about, you know, his career or stories, or hearing stories and, or just hitting or whatever, you know, because I'm sure he would be a fun guy just to listen to talk about different parts of the game, you know, and we just, you know, unfortunately we don't get that anymore. Hopefully it comes back in the future, but yeah, you don't get like last year. You knew, like, absolutely the impact that Nelson Cruz had as a leader in that clubhouse. I mean, it was just, if you spent, you know, 5 minutes in that clubhouse, you knew it and you could feel it and sense it. And it's still that same way, but yeah, you don't, not being around the team and really not having any conversations in person, face to face, it's just hard to get a sense of, you know, the dynamics of a team. Basically, we get a couple Zoom calls a day, and that's it. You know, so
yes,
yeah, it's unfortunate, and it's definitely you don't feel like you know the team as well, the personality of a team.
Last thing, sir, Big Ten football. Explain this. So they're going to come back, and if I've got this right, they're going to play what, 9 games apiece,
or yeah.
that's the schedule, and they're basically going to, with their plan, go straight through.
Yeah.
Now, college sports are not pro sports, and so we have certainly seen numerous games on basically a Saturday basis either postponed or canceled because, you know, a team gets a COVID outbreak or sure. contact tracing. What do you think the conference's plan is for what seems like it's inevitable, which is it's a very long shot that every single team in that conference is going to realistically play straight through without having a game or two canceled or delayed or something? How are they going to work that to make it as fair as possible to complete a season?
Well, I think you're just going to have to go through when you're doing your, you know, figuring out who's first, second, third, fourth in a division. It's going to go by winning percentage, because I will be stunned, absolutely stunned. Now, there's 8 regular season games and then 1 the extra game or whatever. So, but I'll be stunned if all 14 teams play 8 games. We saw it yesterday. I mean, I think the Notre Dame game got postponed after they had some outbreaks this past week. And it's happening all across college football. So to think that everybody's going to be able to play a full schedule, it's not going to happen. And the thing that they don't have that these other conferences have, they have no wiggle room. I mean, other conferences built in buys with the idea that, you know, they can move games around. Big Ten doesn't have that. And so if you have an outbreak and too many guys test positive, you reasonably can't fill the team, then you're just not going to be able to play the game. There's no way to postpone it and make it up somewhere else. So, and that speaks to getting in the college football playoff, Judd. I mean, if you're Ohio State, I think you have to play at least 7 games.
Agreed. Agreed completely.
You can't play 5 games, even if they're so dominant, which I think they're going to be. I don't think you can play 5 and have somebody from the SEC play 9 or 10 and think that that's the same. But it's going to be interesting if they have the college football playoff, how that committee handles this and handles, you know, teams not playing the same number of games and really trying to figure out what's fair. But I think it has to be somewhat representative, right? So I think 7 has to be kind of the benchmark, that if you can play that many, okay, and you look so good, I think, yeah, you can say this is a really good team. But it's, yeah, they're – I just go in fully expecting that some of these games are going to get postponed and just never played.
All right, sir. Talk to you next week, Chip Scoggins. Thank you very much.
All right, brother.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. Chip Scoggins, Conduits of Trouble. We do this every week. Talk to you later.